You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hello and welcome to this week's Corner House podcast. I'm Bren O'Callaghan, Visual Arts Programme Manager at Corner House, and this week I'm joined by Corner House AV technician Dave Petty and our regular contributor Andy Willis. The podcast has a Spanish feel this week as we review Pedro Almodovar's big new release, The Skin I Live In. To celebrate the film's launch, our cafe bar have devised a new menu consisting of pinchos, or to the uninitiated, a skewered tapas-style snack. Later, we'll be hearing from Programme and Communications Assistant Ella Swain and Mark from the cafe bar as they talk through the menu and sample some of the pinchos on offer, not forgetting our What's On Guide and staff recommendation of the week. Dave, Andy and I are just back from watching Almodovar's much-awaited film, The Skin I Live In. To say that this is hotly anticipated would be an understatement, I think. We're not long out of the cinema, and I'm going to ask everyone for their first immediate impressions. Guys, what did you think?
Some people may remember my voice from a few weeks back when I roundly trashed The Tree of Life. But again, that was an instinctive thing, me coming out of the cinema and giving my first opinions. As much as I am vocal about Tree of Life, I don't really want to make the same kind of... I don't want to go down the same path with this film. I thought it was incredibly beautifully put together, and there's definitely a lot to enjoy in this film. A lot has been made about the twist towards the end, and that's something that I think we're all going to struggle to get around.
The first thing I would urge everyone to consider is please don't read anything about this film. We're going to make this podcast as user-friendly and as spoiler-free as possible. Please don't read anything. You have to come and see this film. There's not many films like this come along, maybe one every few years, when there will be a twist that will get people talking. So the secret's not going to stay secret for very long. I don't want to plug it too soon, but we're going to have four screenings a day here at Corner House, so there's plenty of opportunities to come along and see it. Andy, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I found it, as Dave said, quite restrained, but I think that's something in a way, although we associate Almodovar with kind of the excesses of his early films, I think some of his recent films have had that more restrained visual style, and I think this film continues in that vein. Now, because I'd read a lot beforehand, again, as you say, Bren, trying to avoid anything to do with the plot, but that had really kind of reflected on the more horror tinged elements that are in this film, which maybe Almodovar has not done that much before, I found that the restraint kind of made those feel a little bit held back, if you like. So I was a little bit disappointed that there wasn't a bit more over-the-topness with those elements, particularly from a director like Almodovar. But again, we're only just reflecting on it almost straight away. But I think on reflection, that works well, because I think if it had have gone down a more excessive route, then I think that may have overbalanced the film towards those elements. And one of the things that I enjoyed about the film very much, and again, one of the reasons I think we need to try and avoid, I think we're all three of us are on warnings to shout if anyone sounds like they're about to give a plot element away, is it kind of slips from one genre to another. So it's got those kind of melodramatic elements that we expect of Almodovar. It's got the horror elements and all of those sorts of things. And so there's lots of almost red herrings. I mean, near the beginning, there's lots of talk about medical ethics and experimenting on skin and the ethics of testing things on humans. And really, that bears no relation, really, to what we see after. And I was sitting there thinking, oh, this is a bit of a change from Almodovar, a bit of a real social issue here about medical ethics. Very up to date, very contemporary, and then you hardly hear about it again. So I think one of the things it does, it plays with the audience by offering up lots of little snippets that you think are going to take the film in one direction, and then it kind of does a body swerve beautifully, slowly, but body swerve nonetheless, and takes you in another direction. And I think the narrative, which again in a typical Almodovar way jumps back and forward in time, I think that kind of narrative structure assists in that kind of slight illusion about where we're going all the time. And I think once you get onto the fact that it's doing that, for me it worked quite well. I was trying to think, where's it going to go now? Where's it going to go now? And I have to say, it didn't really ever go exactly where I expected it to go, because it never quite took the genres it was using and ran with them. It kind of slipped away from them almost without letting you know that that's what they were doing. And I think on reflection, I'd like to see it again to see if I really do think this after I've digested it properly. But that worked really well for me. It kind of kept you on your toes, I think, intellectually all the way through.
I think you mentioned the plot there. It's something that it's quite difficult to get a handle on when you're trying to hold back on spoilers. I mean, this is about a doctor who is creating a synthetic skin, and there's a lot of morals and ethics around that, but we can't really go too much further than that, otherwise we'll start giving stuff away. But going in, I was expecting a lot of references to, say, stuff like David Cronenberg, who has dealt with a lot of body horror. Doesn't quite go down that route. As Andy said, it's very much restrained. But there's a lot of films that I felt sort of popped in here and there as I was watching it, even stuff as ludicrous as The Human Centipede, something that we shown at Corner House probably a year or so ago, which I is no particular fan of in any shape or form. But it's when it drops these little sort of hints that it's going to go somewhere and then takes you in a completely other direction. That's one of the reasons why I do want to sort of digest the film maybe a little bit more, and maybe we can come back with a podcast too.
Let's just recap for a moment about what this film is about, because I'm conscious that maybe some people listening are thinking, yeah, but I still don't know what this film's about. So Antonio Banderas, who is a preeminent figure in Hollywood and in Spanish cinema, he plays this plastic surgeon who may or may not be slightly unhinged, but is certainly no less brilliant for it. And he appears to be keeping someone captive. Now, that's no giveaway, because this is immediate. It's within the opening reel of the film. For what purpose, we're not clear, and it moves on from there. You're right, Andy, you were talking about, you know, you thought that this might be a film that's talking about medical ethics, and it turns into something else. For me, it took me, and I think we're all being taken in completely different directions, it took me into revenge movies. Got me thinking about revenge and who is in control. And I was expecting this from the trailer alone. I was thinking, is it going to be as obvious as Antonio Banderas as this surgeon figure, he's in control, or is there going to be some kind of interplay between him and a victim? Are the cards going to turn? Is the table going to turn? But yeah, I couldn't quite get away from this idea of revenge movies and American revenge movies and the women fighting back, as it were. Did you see any element of that at all?
I think there's some of that, although, interestingly, I was initially thinking, what's the backstory to the woman who seems to be held captive? Having seen films like Eyes Without a Face, the Franju film, which it's very, very similar to in the way it's set up, although actually unlike it in many, many ways. So I think it sets up lots of things that you're wondering, where's this going to go? What's the backstory for this character? Why is this person in this particular situation? How have they got there? And I think then the film's narrative structures go some way to assist in your kind of piecing that together. So it leaves you with lots of questions early on, which then the film will answer as it slowly unfolds. And that, I think that's why we're having so much trouble trying to encapsulate it. So I think that idea that, yes, there is a kind of story that's set up, draws you in, and yet then will take you on numerous different journeys. And that's one of the things I think with this film that works really well. You can't predict it too much. And obviously that then keeps you glued to the screen, wondering where it's going to go, what's going to go. And I also think that is helped by some of the performances. Certainly Antonio Banderas' performance, which I thought was really, really good, is very, very controlled. And so you're not really given that many clues to what his motivations are early on, because his acting is so passive. He's very kind of blank in the way that he's looking. As Brent said, he's the demented surgeon, but he doesn't look demented. He dresses in a very typically middle-class bourgeois Spanish way. You know, he could be on the board of Real Madrid or something like that, the way he's dressed. You know, typical rich Spaniard. And he seems to be able to interact with people when he's meeting the people he works with and things like this. So he's very controlled, and so he hasn't got that demented surgeon. That's something that the film slowly drips out, I think, about the character. And so I think the performance, for me, worked really, really well in terms of, as I say, making the film seem very mysterious in terms of where it might go and the character himself.
I do think it's also worth pointing out that, for me anyway, it was great fun in parts, especially about two-thirds of the way through, where the film kind of, you know, turns on its head and there's somewhat of a big reveal. that for me, I thought was fantastic.
What kind of recurring themes do you think audiences are expecting of an Almodovar film, and which pop up in this new title?
I think possibly over to Andy on that one.
When we first came out of the cinema, one of the things that I said straight away was, you know, being an academic who works with in a film studies department and with lots of friends who are academics, my first thought was, because there's so much about identity in the film, and particularly around issues around gender, but also I think around class as well, one of the things I thought was, by God, I can almost see the typewriters clanking up, or typewriters, how old do I sound now? The computers, keys being banged away now as people are writing their academic papers about shifting identity and the body and the way people are able to manipulate their identity through body manipulation and all of those kind of things, which we've seen in a number of Almodovar films before. This one, in some ways, I felt, was a kind of summation of some of those ideas within his films. And I think it used different things to filter those sorts of ideas. So I think there is that sense of familiarity around those sorts of issues. But then I do think this film uses a different filter, if you like, to present them to the audience. So even though you'll be able, in a classic kind of auteur way, to tick off some of the Almodovar things, you know, there's a kind of issues around motherhood and who the mother is, and what the mother's role is, all of these sorts of things. It's not overly familiar, I don't think, in the context in which it's presented in this film. And again, as you would expect with Almodovar, it's got very, very precise mise-en-scene. There's lots of artworks used that are reflecting the character. There's some very fluid camera work. All of those things, again, that I think we're familiar with, particularly costumes as well in this. I noticed that Jean-Paul Gaultier had worked on this film as well, and so it's got echoes of the costumes in Kika and some of his earlier, more outrageous films. But in this film, they're very, very controlled, I think. I think it's really, for me, a film of a director kind of almost at confident enough to understate everything. He doesn't feel now, at this point in his career, that he has to be the excessive showman that he was earlier on in his career. I think now it can be much quieter and have the same impact and the same effect. And ultimately, in the way that we've just been talking, I think create something that is quite thoughtful and create lots and lots of discussion afterwards because of the way it kind of is. It's not, you know, Almodovar's films are not didactic. They'll raise issues and just throw them up in the air, and where they land then depends on what you think about them, really, and how you discuss them with the people that you're watching the film with.
Yeah, and in that respect, there's a lot of things in the plot that, as we were discussing just you know, before we started this podcast, there's a lot of plot points dropped here, there and everywhere. Some are picked up, some aren't. Whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, it's almost kind of irrelevant because it just creates discussion, which is what we're doing now. And I think that's a sign of a good film.
We could talk all day, but we'll have to stop at this point. So I think my final words on this film will be a motif that is still ringing with me even now, is this sense of grief and of loss, which is certainly something that in previous Almodovar films, grief for the living as much as the dead, the living dead, those who are lost to us but are still alive. And it wouldn't be an Almodovar film or a discussion about this director without wielding the hammer of Catholicism as well. So for me, there's also an element of resurrection and hope. So that's The Skin I Live In, which previews tonight, Thursday the 25th of August, at 5:50 and also at 8:20. After that, there'll be a full run of screenings from Friday, tomorrow, the 26th of August. If you're a Spanish speaker and you'd like to discuss the film in Spanish, then join us for our post-screening discussion on Thursday, 8th of September. There's plenty more information at cornerhouse.org/film, where you can check out further screening times and watch the trailer.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
It's time for this week's What's On Guide, so listen on for our tips for the bank holiday weekend. If you're planning on watching The Skin I Live In, you might also want to see our screening of George Franju's Eyes Without a Face. Andy, you're doing the pre-screening talk for this title. Is it fair to say that Almodovar's film is heavily influenced by it?
Yes, Eyes Without a Face is, I think, definitely one of the influences on Almodovar for The Skin That I Live In. Franju's Eyes Without a Face really centres again around a rather crazed plastic surgeon. This time, his desire is to recreate or do a face transplant onto his daughter, who's been terribly disfigured in a car accident, which he feels guilty about. And to enable him to do this, him and his rather suspicious assistant, who drives around in a kind of 2CV all around the outskirts of Paris with some jaunty French music playing in the background, kidnapping young students and the like, who they then take back to their lair, which is on the outskirts of Paris, and they perform these skin grafts. Now, the film was released in 1960, And there are some incredibly graphic scenes of these surgery operations. And one of the amazing things about this film is the way it shows things. And I think one of the things that this film does more than anything else is it influences a whole generation of European filmmakers then in the horror genre in particular, who go on to show the horror on screen. So if you have the stomach for a black and white film that clearly influences not only Pedro Almodovar but a whole raft of European and American filmmakers, then I would highly recommend Eyes Without a Face. 1960 is an interesting year because it's the year of Psycho, it's the year of Peeping Tom, and it's the year that Eyes Without a Face was released, all films which have greatly influenced horror filmmaking since then. So it's a rare chance to see it on the big screen, so I would recommend everyone to get along.
Tickets are now on sale for Eyes Without a Face. There is just the one screening here at Corner House, so it's a rare opportunity. It's showing at 8:20 on Wednesday, the 31st of August. It's Manchester Pride this week, and this year Pride is celebrating its 21st birthday with 10 days worth of events. It all kicks off tomorrow, Friday, 26th of August, with the big weekend, a 71-hour non-stop party featuring big-name entertainment and pop acts, including Alexandra Burke and Pan Am. For more information, go to www.manchesterpride.com. Now, if you need respite from the big weekend, we recommend checking out Pride's programme of alternative fringe events. It includes everything from literature and theatre nights to outdoor events. One thing we're all looking forward to is Showgirls, which is a live immersive cinema experience at Croc Gallery. Now, here's Joe Spencer from Collective Tranarchy to tell us more.
We're opening the night with our own version of the show Goddess, one that's featured in Showgirls, which can have drag queens emerging from volcanoes and lots of gold and glitter. We've got a drag queen thrust-it competition. We're going to have an instructional video on how to do the strip-along element of the show. We've got a little a live video link from Joshua Grinnell, who's Peaches Christ. And then we're going to screening Showgirls, and there's going to be a whole interactive element there. And then we've got the band Bad Taste Barbies on straight after the film. And then after that, it's disco. So we've got Pumpin' Iron, The Nihilist, and Chew Disco.
Thanks, Joe. So that's Tranarchy presents Showgirls at Crack Gallery this Saturday, 27th of August. Tickets are £5 and it starts from 8:30 p.m. until late.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Now, you've heard us talk about The Skin I Live In, which is out today. To celebrate its release, our cafe bar will be serving a selection of pinchos over the bank holiday weekend. Earlier in the week, programme and communications assistant Ella Swain caught up with Mark from the cafe bar to find out more about this Spanish snack.
I'm a fan of food generally, and Spanish food is probably one of my favourites. This weekend, the cafe bar are putting on pinchos, which is a little bit like the Spanish tapas, but a tiny bit different. I'm here with Mark from the cafe bar. Mark, can you tell us a little bit more about pinchos?
Well, pinchos are very similar to tapas, but they're from the northern part of Spain, from the Basque country. Pinchos actually means thorn or spike, which refers to the cocktail stick that is often served with the pinchos. They're just basically a very similar snack to tapas, but served in a completely different way.
So we've got a plate in front of us. It looks amazing. There's loads of different colourful bits on there, stacks of tartars and little bellinis. Are they traditional pinchos, Mark?
These are not truly traditional Basque pinchos. This is our own Corner House take on pinchos. I've set my head chef a task to come up with something of the style, but with different flavours from all around Europe. So we have something that is quite traditional, which is a tortilla with serrano and spinach and chorizo. But we also have things like potato blinis with butterbean hummus, pepper juice and caviar. We have little spikes with quail's eggs, anchovies, tapenade and cherry tomatoes. A whole selection of things. We have filled crepes with smoked salmon and creme fraiche and some tempura battered king prawns.
And I'm going to go for that roll there. Did you say that was a crepe? Salmon. Thanks.
So this is basically a crepe made with chives and tarragon. It's then filled with smoked salmon and creme fraiche, rolled up and then cut into what looks a bit like Swiss roll, but then spiked with a cocktail stick, served pinchos style.
I'm still chewing. That was really nice. It's quite lemony. Nice smoked salmon, herby. It's good, I would recommend it highly.
Okay, so we've got another cocktail stick, but it's spiked with deep-fried basil, with a nice piece of grilled halloumi, roast vegetables, and sat on a cherry tomato on the bottom just to give it some stability.
This one does look a bit of a handful, and I don't think it's going to make for graceful eating, but I'm going to have a go. The basil's actually a bit... It's nice, but it's not what I expected. It's sort of... because it's deep fried, it's quite crispy, and the flavour is definitely more intense because of that. But it's really nice, and it works well texture and flavour-wise with the whole vegetable stack. Sort of reminds me a bit of holiday food. Probably the flavours, they're quite fresh, the sort of thing you eat in the sun. It's really nice.
If you like this salmon crepe, then you may also like the deep-fried king prawns with goat's cheese on a potato bellini. Very crispy on the outside. Very delicious.
They're probably my favourite, actually. They're actually quite sweet. Like Mark said, crunchy, but some like soft textures as well. They're really good. I could probably finish off the rest of that plate to myself, but I won't. I'm going to be brave and try one with caviar. I must say, it's not really appealed to me before, but I'll give it a go. I'm sure it's lovely. So this has got butter bean. So it kind of looks like hummus. It's essentially butter bean hummus. A little, is that a tomato or a pepper? A pepper jew pepper and caviar. I'll try it now.
We don't usually use caviar, being an expensive ingredient, but as it's a special occasion, we thought we'd push the boat out.
That's probably... I'm going to revise my favourites. Put that one at the top. The caviar's actually really nice. It wasn't too strong. It's not really as if you can taste that on its own, but it kind of works really well with the other flavours on the bellini. Quite a soft texture. It's just quite fresh, I suppose, and zingy. The whole small pinch-offs. What sort of prices are they?
Well, we're looking at doing plates of six pinchos, which you can pick individually for about a fiver.
Okay, and I suppose they're quite good for sharing. And what would you wash them down with?
Well, they go down with beer or wine. We have lovely Estrella from Barcelona, which is always good for with a Spanish snack. Or we're also doing some Riojas over the period of the release of the film. We'll then be adding further Riojas to our menu over the foreseeable future.
So the preview of the film's tonight, and then the film runs for at least 2 weeks from Friday. But the Pinchos offer is just for the opening weekend, is that right, Mark?
Yeah, that's right. We'll be running the Pinchos offer from Thursday the 25th till Monday the 29th, in the evenings only, but there'll be a varied and fine selection for people to take.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
Now it's time for our staff recommendation of the week. Let's hear from Corner House digital content producer Sarah Leach, who recommends a film from our play to Gernstrand.
This week I'd like to recommend the documentary Senna. I saw it a couple of months ago and it's back as part of the Play It Again. It's about the Formula One star Ayrton Senna. Now I'm not a massive Formula One fan, never have been, not really into guys driving around tracks for hours on end, but this was really good, really engaging documentary, loads of archive footage. What I liked about it was no talking head interviews. There was lots of audio clips from new and old interviews, but it really merged well with some of the home footage and you got a real personal feel into Senna's life. It's quite an emotive film. I did get a little bit emotional in times. I think I might have shed a tear or two, but I thoroughly recommend it. You don't need to be into Formula One at all to watch it. It's a really great documentary. I recommend you come and see it.
Thanks, Sarah. We're also bringing back Submarine and The Tree of Life as part of Play It Again. For information on screening times, visit cornerhouse.org/playitagain. Or if you'd like to recommend a recent film for this strand, email playitagain@cornerhouse.org and tell us why your film choice deserves a second run. So that's all for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget there's more information about our film, art and creative programmes on the website, so visit cornerhouse.org. Alternatively, you can follow us at CornerhouseMCR on Twitter or like us on Facebook to keep up with what we're doing. See you next Thursday.
You've been listening to the Corner House podcast.